There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg, and I'm your host of Yoga Birth Babies. And today we're going to talk about one of my all-time favorite topics, the pelvic floor. So if you've been a listener to Yoga Birth Babies, you're going to know that anytime I have the opportunity to talk about the pelvic floor, I will bring an expert on to do so. It is so important to have a healthy pelvic floor, to have a functional birth, to have a healthy body. So not only have I picked the brains of many experts on this, I've taken multiple certifications. So today we're going to talk about ways to relax your pelvic floor, the function of your pelvic floor, how it impacts birth, and it certainly does, how to prepare your pelvic floor for birth, understanding Kegels, do we need to do them? When do we need to do them? How do you even do them? So many topics about the pelvic floor. So to have this conversation, I have Cara Mortifoglio, and she is a pelvic floor specialist. She's the co-owner of physical therapy practice in Manhattan, Long Island, and Westchester, and she specializes in treating all pelvic floor disorders, including pregnancy, postpartum, bladder, bowel, sexual dysfunctions, everything pelvic floor related. Cara is your person. So she and I have a really great conversation that I think you're going to get a lot of great information out of. You will just hear the delight in my voice as we talk. Probably also a little stuffiness, if I'm going to be honest. I know I just can't get rid of a cold all winter. So before we get to my chat with Cara, I just always love to touch base about the ongoings at Prenatal Yoga Center. So we're still having online classes every day. I have heard amazing feedback from people that want to take classes in person, but they're not able to, whether they're not in the area or it doesn't fit with their schedule, or they've got other kids and our class time just doesn't work for them. And they've really enjoyed having the opportunity to either take our online class or our re-releases. So because we've heard the feedback from the community, we're going to keep going 7 days a week, online classes and a re-release. We have in-studio classes 6 days a week, and we've got our workshops, all of our childbirth education classes, our lactation classes, CPR, infant safety CPR, comforting touch, all of these things to help prepare you for pregnancy, birth, and beyond. We've got it in studio and online. And of course, I always like to just mention our teacher training. So as I've already talked about, I am a geek when it comes to anatomy. I love understanding the body to understand how then to have it apply to support people during pregnancy, preparing for birth, and healing from postpartum. So our training dives into that curiosity, and it is intense, it is deep, it is thought-provoking. We go into the why instead of just have you memorize things. So if any of this resonates with you, check out our teacher training. It's a prenatal teacher training 4 times a year, and an online postnatal teacher training 1 a year. So check all that out. And then the last thing is always a big thank you to our community. Thanks for showing up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. Okay, we're going to take a super quick break. And when we come back, please enjoy my conversation with Cara. Hi, Cara. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to talk to you about the pelvic floor. It's one of my all-time favorite conversations and topics. I'm a bit of an anatomy geek, so this is so exciting. So thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome. I'm excited to be on here.
Great. So I guess before we jump into pelvic floor and birth and Kegels and all that, I'd love to learn a little bit more about you and what led you towards pelvic floor physical therapy.
So I graduated physical therapy school in 2009. I went to school in Boston. And at that time in my physical therapy program, I had one elective I could take. And so I took a class on treating pregnant women, and I loved it. You know, it was so interesting. We touched on the pelvic floor. We learned a lot about Kegels, but that was about all the information that we got. And then as I, progressed in my career, I moved to New York City. I worked at a hospital. I just got more and more interested in it. So I started taking classes. I started reaching out to mentors. And then I decided to move from a hospital to just a private pelvic floor PT clinic. And from there, I really learned a lot. So I got a certification from the American Physical Therapy Association. It's called a Women's Health Clinical Specialist. And, you know, from there, I've become a teaching assistant. I've taken lots of other courses and certifications. I'm a certified Pulsar Pilates instructor. And then I opened up my own clinic in New York City. I have a business partner, Erica, and we've been in business almost 5 years now. And so we treat anybody with a pelvic floor, men, women, trans patients, children. And so that's how I developed my love for the pelvic floor.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Where, just because I'm from the Boston area, which school did you go to?
I went to MGH.
MG,
Mass General Hospital. Mass General Hospital. Yeah, they have it sounds like an online school, but it's actually a real school.
I mean, I know Mass General is an amazing hospital. Yes. I didn't know they had a college. Interesting.
They have, it's just a graduate school, and the campus is located in Charlestown. But we we did our anatomy work at Harvard, and like we did clinical rotations, you know, at MGH.
Oh, fun. Yeah, no, I'm from the Boston area, but I went to school at the Boston Observatory. So I love Boston, and it's a great college town. But
yes,
I digress from where we're talking about. I had to ask. All right. So, let's talk about a little more to the pelvic floor. So I guess the first thing to do is, describe the pelvic floor and its function. Because when I've said to new students, and we have a couple of pelvic floor models at the studio, so people, once they start taking our classes, they know. But when I didn't have that and I mentioned pelvic floor, I think people just think it's the perineum or the vagina, and it's so much more. So can you describe the pelvic floor and its function?
Yes. So the pelvic floor is a group of muscles. I think of it like a sling. It sits at the bottom of our pelvis, and it goes from the tailbone to the pubic bone. So it's that nice sling that sits there, and your organs sit on top of it. So your rectum sits there, your uterus and your vagina, and your bladder. And so basically the pelvic floor muscles are supporting those organs, but they also are allowing the urethra, the rectum, and the vaginal opening to pass through. And so the pelvic floor muscles do a lot of different things. So they hold our sphincters. So they have our urethral sphincter, our anal sphincter. They regulate pressure in our body. So if we cough, we laugh, we sneeze, the pelvic floor muscles will tighten. They help to stabilize the spine just because they're connected to the tailbone. So if you're going to jump or you're going to pick up something heavy, pelvic floor muscles are going to fire and tighten. And then they also contribute to sexual arousal. So when we have an orgasm, the pelvic floor muscles contract rhythmically, and they allow us to have an orgasm. So they're a pretty complicated group of muscles. They're actually pretty small. You know, everybody thinks that they're so huge. They're tiny little muscles in the base of your pelvis.
I appreciate that. And one thing that I've had some students get interested in, because again, I pull the model out, is that there's different layers. Like the first layer, when I pull it off the model, to me, it looks a little bit like a stingray.
It does. It totally does. Yes.
And so I've had students have no idea that it really, it's more complex than a lot of people think it is. And there's, you know, the different layers. So
yeah, it does so much. It does so much.
Well, let's talk about how the pelvic floor impacts birth. This is one of my favorite topics.
Yes. And I read through your bio, and you've done a lot of training with Leslie Howard,
did Leslie Howard. I did training with her, and then I did another training with Dr. Sarah Duvall. Feel like both of them just kind of blew my mind. I love this stuff. Oh, and then also I did a spinning babies training, which talks a lot about the pelvic floor and how it can disturb birth in ways if it's not balanced. So I'll just hand you the baton and you go with it.
Okay. So during birth, I like to think of the pelvic floor muscles as a group of muscles that need to move out of the way. right? So these pelvic floor muscles, we really want them to be as relaxed as possible to make way for the baby. So as your uterus starts to contract, it's basically with every uterine contraction, pushing the baby's head down, and it's massaging your pelvic floor muscles, which is great. That's what we want it to do. So by the time you're fully dilated and it's time to push, your pelvic floor muscles have been warmed up and they're going to be able to stretch and get out of the way. Now, if you have tight or overactive pelvic floor muscles, this could just make it harder for the baby to make downward progress because they're not stretching as much. The baby is not going to be able to descend as low as we want the baby to. And then if you have poor coordination of your pelvic floor muscles, so once you get to that pushing phase, you know, your nurse, the doctor's telling you to push, if you're actually tightening your pelvic floor muscles as opposed to relaxing them, it's going to take a lot longer for you to get the baby out. And then in some instances, you could maybe even need some instrumentation like forceps or a vacuum, something like that.
Yeah, I've also found that sometimes there's tension in certain parts. And as you said, like the baby's head's not coming down, or it can tilt the baby's head. So it can go, instead of the chin being nice and tucked in, it can hit kind of like a more tight spot, and it can maybe tip the head asynclitically or move the chin away, which we also know is going to stall progress. I love that by working with someone like you, or, you know, through prenatal yoga, that we can help prepare for a smoother birth by addressing the pelvic floor. I find that so fascinating.
Absolutely.
So let's actually talk about that. So how can somebody, what are ways somebody can prepare their pelvic floor for birth?
Yes. So to prepare for birth, there's a few different things I recommend. So the first thing would be perineal massage. And so the perineum is the area between the vagina and the anus. And so usually around 34, 35 weeks, I like to teach people how to massage the perineum. So you're just using your fingers to just massage and soften that area. It'll help to reduce tears, allow that area to stretch a little bit better. The second thing is just practicing how to push. So understanding what the sensation of pushing looks like, which is something you can just do when you're having a bowel movement, just feeling what it feels like to open up the muscles, to let it relax. There is actually this device called the Epino. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, I will be totally honest. I've talked to some other folks that are not super keen on it. So I'm curious your thoughts
you
on
know,
it.
I feel like I need to know what it is, right? Because people will bring it in because it's not FDA approved in the United States. And so they bring in this device. It kind of looks like a blood pressure cuff. And then it has like a bulb at the end, you know, and the thought is that if people put it inside, they can practice learning how to push. I don't know. I've only used it a few times, so I have some mixed results, but that is something that, you know, folks are doing over in Europe to help prepare for birth. But I just wanted to bring it up. And then the other thing that I like to have people prepare for birth is just working on hip openers and stretching their adductors, their inner thigh muscles, because that will help relax the pelvic floor as well.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw in really good diaphragmatic breathing, because we know the diaphragm and the pelvic floor have a relationship. So that's something we do in our class all the time. And what are your thoughts on also making sure the psoas is not overly engaged?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that's super important. And definitely with pregnancy, I will say people's psoases tend to get shorter and tighter just because of the, you know, changes with pregnancy. So that is absolutely helpful as well.
All right. So one thing that comes up in class a lot is when we talk about the pelvic floor. And I think what happens is people get pregnant, their care provider's like, oh, just do Kegels. And then they're just doing Kegels and they don't know about the importance of relaxing, but they also just assume that everyone needs to engage. And so I talked to them about, here are some indications of an overly contracted pelvic floor. And people are surprised that they fit those categories. And I'd love to have a little bit more of an in-depth conversation about the difference between an overly contracted pelvic floor and having strength in the pelvic floor. Will you go with that?
Yes, yes. So just thinking about the function of the pelvic floor muscles, I like to describe the pelvic floor as a trampoline. So the pelvic floor is the ability to contract, but to also lengthen. And so throughout our day, the pelvic floor is moving up and down all the time, right? It's contracting when we sneeze. It's going to contract when we laugh. When we go to jump, it's going to contract. But in between those contractions, it's going to relax. And so I think it's really important that we have the ability to tighten and relax, because because otherwise, if that doesn't happen and our pelvic floor is held in this state of tension the entire time, it's not going to be able to respond to all these different forces. Another analogy I could use is like if I walked around with my hands clenched all day and I needed to open up my hand quickly to catch something, I wouldn't be able to. I'd have to kind of like peel my fingers apart, and it would take time in order to be able to do that. And so with the pelvic floor, what could happen is like, let's say you have a tight pelvic floor and you go to laugh or sneeze, your muscles are already tight. And then what happens is you're going to leak because the muscles couldn't respond properly and with the right coordination and timing. And so it's just really important that your pelvic floor has this mobility in it, because a tight pelvic floor is going to cause, it can contribute to leaking, urinary leaking, it can cause pain, it could cause painful sex, and it can also cause constipation.
And I think people leak and then they're like, oh no, I'm leaking. I better do more Kegels. So it's this awful cycle that happens.
It's this awful cycle. It's this awful narrative too, that I feel is like pushed towards people that are female. Like, your pelvic floor is too weak. It's loose and it needs to be tighter. But, you know, really doing a lot of Kegels could potentially make things worse if your pelvic floor is overactive.
So let's go down that Kegel landmine. Describe, because I also think that people don't always know, I think, what Kegels are. Like, I was describing it to a student one time and she said she tried it and she actually felt like she was more pushing than engaging. So I think there's confusion there. And I think, and when we talked about it more, she said she didn't really know what the feedback of lifting and toning was, but she understood the feedback of pushing. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So if you can describe, I guess, the function of Kegels, what they are, when, and how you would use them with a client.
Okay. So Kegels are a basic term for just a contraction of the pelvic floor. And so our pelvic floor contracts in two ways. So it does more of a long sustained hold of the pelvic floor muscles. And it also does these quick contractions. So the quick contractions would be used, that's what happens naturally, again, to prevent leaking. It closes off our sphincters, et cetera. And then those longer sustained holds would be more longer term types of pressure on our pelvic floor. And so using Kegels with patients, I don't use them a lot in isolation, but what I like to teach is how to engage or tighten your pelvic floor in coordination with your abdominal muscles, because that's going to be a more effective way to activate your pelvic floor. And then also making sure you're not holding your breath, because if we hold our breath, sometimes you're going to get that bearing down sensation. The one time I will teach Kegels is if somebody has very poor coordination. So like you said about your student, if somebody thinks that they're engaging their pelvic floors or pelvic floor muscles or tightening them and they're actually bearing down, we would want to work on just that feeling of lifting, drawing up, and trying to get them to use other muscles to help. The coordination can be really important in getting people to understand what they're doing.
How would you, I'm kind of just throwing this out there too. Yeah. How would you, if you had a brand new client and you were using an isolation, how would you describe to them what muscles and just how to find that? Because I've used so many different analogies and images. Again, I pulled the pelvic floor model out, but I would love to hear how you break that down to describe it to someone.
Yes. So, I mean, the different anatomical cues you could use would be drawing your sit bones together, drawing your anus and clitoris together, thinking about drawing a P up your vagina. Thinking about putting on a pair of pants that are too tight. And that cue is going to have people draw in their lower abdominals, but then their pelvic floor will lift up too. I don't love to use the cue of like thinking like you're stopping urine, because I don't necessarily want people to try to stop urine when they're peeing, or trying to prevent gas from coming out from their anus.
Okay. Yeah. I use the sit bones, and then I think Like, you're tying everything together. You're drawing your sit bones together, your pubic bone to tailbone towards one another. I use a blueberry image of the vagina. I've used, recently someone told me about, imagine there's a sponge in your vagina and you're actually engaging, you're trying to squeeze the sponge and draw the fluid up to your cervix. I thought that was interesting.
That's interesting, yeah.
When I tried that, I actually felt my lower abs engage on that one. How come you don't like the stopping, the passing gas?
Passing gas is fine. It's stopping the urine, because I think some people think that they should try to do Kegels when they're urinating. And when you're urinating,
and then they're going to give themselves a urinary tract infection.
Exactly. So I just don't like that cue, because patients come in and they're like, well, I try to stop my urine. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. That's not good. I want your pelvic floor to be relaxed when you're peeing.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. All right. Mm-hmm. We're going to go into some of the muscles that can help strengthen the pelvic floor. We're going to take a super quick break first. So we'll take a break. We'll come right back and we're going to talk more about strengthening. We'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame, so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
All right, so we are back. And one of the things that I loved learning about, especially when I was taking Dr. Duval's course, was the importance of strengthening other muscles, not just the pelvic floor. So let's talk about what other muscles need to be involved so the pelvic floor doesn't have to do all the work.
Yes. So I said earlier in the podcast that your pelvic floor muscles are so teeny, teeny, tiny. They're like the size of your hand. They're very small and thin. And so those muscles are not really meant to absorb a lot of shock and force. And so if they are absorbing a lot of shock and force, they're going to tend to get tight, painful, et cetera. So if we think about the other muscles that surround your core, those muscles are much larger, such as your gluteal muscles or your hip abductor muscles, which are also gluteal muscles. They're just on the sides of your hip. Those muscles, if those muscles are nice and strong, they're going to be able to absorb shock and force and take some pressure off of your pelvic floor. Also, your abdominal muscles, your rectus abdominis, your obliques, your back muscles. If those muscles are strong, that will also take pressure off of your pelvic floor. And then thinking about your diaphragm, just making sure that your diaphragm is moving properly will also help take pressure off of your pelvic floor.
I think the diaphragm is one that I think a lot of people don't breathe well. I feel like people are either high chest breathers or they're, and I hate this term in yoga, belly breathers, where they're pushing their belly forward, or they're paradoxical breathers and they're sucking their stomach in and they have like no back expansion. So when you're working with someone on just finding their breathing to get, because we know that that relationship between the diaphragm and the pelvic floor is really vital for health of both functions. How do you teach someone just good breathing? Because it sounds crazy if people like, I breathe all day long, but you know, there can be constriction.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I don't like to use belly breathing because I think belly breathing is nice and like a relaxed state, but I think sometimes when I use that cue, people do push their belly.
Yeah, they push. Yeah. I call it 360 breather. Actually, I call it 180 because people, I want them to get in their side and back ribs more. That's where I find there's a lot of sticky spots.
I agree with you. So I tend to teach more 360 breathing, calling it the umbrella breath. Yeah. And I just like to have people really focus on expanding their ribs in all different directions, mostly towards the side and posteriorly towards their back. So I'll have them go into different positions. Like if you lay on your stomach, right, you can't really breathe into the front part of your ribs. So you can just practice breathing into the back part of your ribs. Or sometimes I'll tie a TheraBand around their ribs and then have them practice expanding it from there. Or even just having having them round their upper body so they can just access the back part of their ribs can be really helpful.
What about for pregnant folks? Because I do it in child's pose for my postpartum folks who, especially holding a baby, their back ribs are so, so tight. But and we do hands at the ribs for the pregnant folks. I don't have enough TheraBands to hand out in the whole class.
Hands at the ribs are great, but you could even put them into like standing and leaning onto something with their elbows.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And in PT, we call it like the modified plantigrade position. I guess they could be on their hands and knees, but that just may be comfortable or maybe propped up on a bolster or a wedge or something.
Yeah.
So their upper body is a little bit more elevated. But yeah, usually in that position and hands on ribs is great.
So going back to kind of the glutes and the adductors and the abductors, do you have favorite exercises that you include when you want someone to get a little stronger in that area?
Yes. I mean, nothing.
It's pretty individualized.
It's pretty individualized. There's not like one exercise that I'm like, oh, you definitely have to do. But the one thing that I definitely do teach people is to not squeeze your abs all day.
Yes.
Because I find that people just walk around sucking in all day. And then when you're sucking in all day, your pelvic floor is tight all day. And so when people are so tight in their abs and their pelvic floor, sometimes it seems to me like their other muscles aren't having to do any work.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's a downward pressure too.
Yes, exactly. So like if I can get them to kind of release during the day, we see that they're able to actually strengthen their glutes in a better way or their hip abductors or adductors in a better way.
Perfect. Yeah, no, I try to throw in, it's funny because our classes are, while we call them yoga, there's a lot of functional strength in there. I slip all sorts of like Romanian deadlifts in there. I do squats and isometric contractions for the outer hips and reverse clamshells. I love this stuff. It makes me so excited to know that people can find more strength and stability so that their pelvic floors can be more functional, so their birth can be more functional. All right, so let's jump into what should you do if someone has a both overly contracted and weak pelvic floor, because they weak and tight tend to go hand in hand.
Yes. So if somebody is overly contracted, we would want to think about what I just said before. Like we would want to have them make sure they're not in a holding pattern all day. We would want to focus on doing some stretching of the pelvic floor, which could be accomplished through yoga or movement. Oftentimes doing, you know, inner thigh stretches, diaphragmatic breathing can help to relax the pelvic floor. You could consider using a foam roller or a massage ball to massage that external layer of the pelvic floor that you talked about before. And then if somebody, you know, needs to do some sort of internal stretching, there's devices that they sell, such as a vaginal dilator, a vaginal wand, or considering coming in to see a pelvic floor PT like myself, so we can do some sort of internal manipulation of the pelvic floor muscles to allow them to relax. And then once they're relaxed, we would just want to focus on the coordination so the person understands, you know, what it feels like to be contracted and what it feels like to be relaxed.
What about during pregnancy? Do you do much internal work then, or is it more just external?
No, we do internal work. Typically, we'll wait until after the first trimester to do the internal work. And as long as the person is not on pelvic rest, it should be fine.
That sounds great. Because I send people to pelvic floor PTs as much as I possibly can. Do you have a favorite? So you mentioned some adductor stretching. Is there to release the tension of the pelvic floor? What are some other ways? I guess you also said like dilators. Is there anything else people could do to help relax and then rebuild the strength?
I think deep squat is nice, but you know, it depends on their hip mobility, right? Malasana, like depends on hip mobility and how able they're able to get into it. I think I touched on it. I mean, I think a lot of hip openers in yoga are great. I mean, truly like wide straddle forward fold is nice. Happy baby.
Yeah, we do a lot of internal rotation, try to widen those sit bones, get a little
more
space.
Internal rotation is great. Yes. To widen the sit bones is perfect.
Oh, this has been so fun. Is there anything about the pelvic floor because you are the expert, I have missed that somebody should think about when preparing their body for birth?
Well, I think you touched on the internal rotation piece. I think it's really important that during labor to understand that in the beginning part of labor, you actually want to be in a position where your hips are wider and your hips are externally rotated, right, in order to allow the baby to descend. But once the baby gets under that pubic bone and we're getting closer to pushing, you do actually want your knees to come in, right, like you said, into internal rotation. So I think working into some internal rotation is really nice to help with birth and help open up the pelvic floor. And then also just allowing your sacrum to be nice and free.
Yeah, that's a huge part.
Yeah, if you're let's say you're having tailbone pain, right, and you're having a lot of pain with sitting, we would want to work on letting that tailbone lift up, you know, so in cat-cow or child's pose, just lifting up, because the sacrum really needs to open up in order for that baby to come out as well. So that's another piece to think about working on.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just having a conversation with one of my friends who's also a prenatal yoga teacher. We were talking about, isn't it ironic that people are laying on their back most of the time when birthing, and that pushes, that doesn't give the sacrum the space to get out of the way. And what we really need is that internal rotation to widen the sit bones and then space for the sacrum to kind of fly up and out to make room for baby. So I guess that could be a whole other conversation about why do we birth that way?
Yes, absolutely. And then I would also just say in general, in terms of, you know, keeping a healthy pelvic floor would be just managing constipation, which obviously is challenging in pregnancy, but trying to make sure you're getting enough water, fiber, et cetera. Because if you're very constipated and there's a lot of stool sitting in the rectum, your pelvic floor muscles will be resting at a higher tone, like tighter.
Yeah.
Right. And then also managing your bladder habits. So some of the things that could make your pelvic floor muscles a little bit tighter would be pushing when you're urinating, hovering over the toilet, so trying to pee in a squatted position, as well as we want to avoid urinating just in case. So meaning like, you know, frequently peeing, you know, before you leave the house, when you arrive somewhere, because again, sometimes we end up pushing and then that's going to tighten up the pelvic floor muscles.
I have to admit I'm the worst at that. Like, I know I have a train ride into the city and I always pee before because I'm like, I don't want to have to pee on the New Jersey Transit. Like,
Everybody does it. You don't want to be doing it in excess, I'd say.
This has been great. Okay, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, what is one final tip or piece of advice you'd like to offer new and expectant parents? We'll be right back. We are back. Okay, so what is one final tip or piece of advice you would like to offer new and expectant parents?
My final tip would be that less is more. So I would say that as you're getting closer to delivery of your baby, it's really important to let your body rest. And I would avoid doing Kegels as you're getting very close to delivery. And I would avoid a lot of vigorous activity. Because again, like we spoke about before, we want your pelvic floor to be relaxed so it can open up and get out of the way for delivery. And so the more relaxed your pelvic floor is, oftentimes the easier the delivery will be.
And that could explain why my first birth took 42 hours because I was spinning up until literally the day. I know I did all the things I know not to do now, but I was the worst. I was the worst. So that is my mission, to help people not have that. So I'm so glad that you said that.
Yes. So it was so hard on the pelvic floor.
As much as I still love riding, and I like riding like in class and on my bike, like riding around on my bike is one of the most freeing things. But yeah, I have to really consciously relax my pelvic floor after in my psoas. So I'm not trying to tell all the spinners out there not to do it, but maybe stop before your due date.
Yeah, I think stop like 35 weeks, 35, 36 weeks, give yourself like a month without spinning. I think that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could have told myself that years ago. Okay, where can people find your work?
Yes. So I am located in Manhattan, 42nd and Madison. Our address is 315 Madison Avenue. That's our primary clinic that I treat out of. I'm also work on Mondays at our clinic in Great Neck. That's at 8 Bond Street. And then we have a third clinic in Scarsdale, which I don't work out of, but we have some great therapists there. So you can find me there. And then you can go to our website, which is solsticept.com. And then we're on Instagram, TikTok, can find me anyway there. You can email me. My email is Kara, K-A-R-A, at solsticept.com.
Oh, Kara, this has been so fun. Again, I love talking pelvic floor, so I had such a great time with this. Thank you so much.
Yes, me too. Thanks for having me.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.